Saturday Coffee Clutch. And it is the Saturday Coffee Clutch with Heather Lofthouse and yours truly, Robert Reich. We are delighted to be with you again. And Heather, good to see you.
And you.
So what do we have? What do we have on the agenda this week?
We have Trump's trials and tribulations. We have...
How much time do we have?
Not enough. Well, actually a lot, apparently, given delays. We have RFK Jr. and the worm he claims was in his brain. We'll touch on that.
I don't want to touch on it. I really don't. Yeah.
And then we'll have some positive economic news. We'll talk about that terrible Apple ad that came out. There's lots to do.
Okay, let's go.
Let's go. Okay, the voter deception hush money trial.
Well, I think the big news this week, and the only thing that most of the public is going to remember, is Stormy Daniels and that kind of a graphic description of Donald Trump in the bedroom. And it is not – the interesting thing is this trial is about election interference.
Right.
It's not about kind of sexual assault. It's not about the Me Too movement. And yet the framing of that felt very much like – what we've seen, you know, Harvey Weinstein and others.
Yeah.
So I don't know what jurors are going to make of it. The Trump lawyers continued to move for a mistrial based upon it being too sensational.
Yeah.
But, I mean, honestly, they knew she was coming. They knew what she was going to say.
Of course. She has to be up there. It's literally about her.
And she's been saying the same thing for years.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Exactly.
Grow up.
But so you have said, it's one juror, right? One juror.
That's all we need. That's right. I mean, put this in perspective. Yeah. You've got a bunch of Trump trials. The only one that has any chance of convicting him is the New York one, because everything else is on hold or delayed.
Right. Georgia, hold or delayed.
That's right, because they're appealing Fonnie Willis.
Right.
And
Florida.
And Fonnie Willis's affair. I mean, the irony there in terms of Trump and his affairs, but let's go beyond that.
Yeah.
Florida, yes. Eileen Cannon, the Trump appointee judge, is delaying that. No idea when that's going to be resumed.
Yep.
And then you have every other trial. The Supreme Court is holding the big one, the Trump conspiracy and trial on election interference, the big election interference, holding that pending a determination on immunity, presidential immunity, which is a joke. I mean, it should be a joke.
I know.
But they're not going to get to that until June or July.
Right.
And so the only one, Heather, is this election interference in New York City. It's a New York trial in the New York Criminal Court. And one juror could make the difference. All you need is one, and there's no guilt.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I can't even say it. But I do think this feels like a lot of calendar manipulation. This feels like a lot of people in an orchestrated way really not acting as judges, I don't think. I think it's more political choices and operatives moving calendars, transcending time with a goal. And it goes back to the Federalist Society. I mean, this is a long time that there have been placing people all around to work in this way. No? Do I sound?
Well, I think there's a lot to what you say, but I want to just make sure that people understand Trump's lawyers are doing what Trump's lawyers should be doing, or any lawyer
should
be doing.
Right, right.
They're working for their client,
yep.
And Trump is a very difficult client, and they're trying to get him off. And the way to get him off is to delay the trial.
Right.
Now, they obviously have the political calendar in their heads, but it doesn't make what they're doing unethical.
No, right. But they're conservative jurists. And then I feel like there are jurists now who are part of a bigger movement.
Well, Judge Merchan in New York, Juan Merchan, there's nothing about him that indicates that he's particularly conservative. Trump, remember, has been saying over and over again he can't get a fair trial in New York. The jurors are all Democrats.
Right.
The judge is off his rocker. And he, Judge Merchan, has continually pushed back and said to Trump, finally, after 10 of these, I'm holding you in contempt. And if one more outburst occurs, you're going to jail.
Right.
Then it's going to be interesting.
Yes, of course.
Because if he goes to jail, he becomes, that is, Trump becomes a martyr.
Right. But I think the Trump appointees here and there, SCOTUS, hello, the judges.
I think you're absolutely right about the Supreme Court. Yeah. There's no question. The Supreme Court is now dominated by either Republicans or the three Trump appointees, total of six. And they don't want to decide this case before the election.
No, and they could.
And they could do it if they wanted to, but they won't. Unlike other Supreme Courts, you know, the Supreme Court that decided on the Bush against Gore case, they were quick.
Yeah.
Other Supreme Courts, in terms of big presidential cases, have been much faster. This Supreme Court will delay, because it doesn't want a verdict. It doesn't want a decision that will allow the underlying trial to move forward and come up with a verdict. Now, that means a lot of people are going to be very cynical about our entire justice system.
I know, as they should be.
But let me just push the ish a little bit. It's the way the criminal justice system is designed. You don't want to decide anybody's a criminal before there is adequate evidence. You want to allow all motions to get a full airing.
But also, you kind of would hope that your buddies will be somewhere and push it down the line for you as well.
If you are a Republican.
I mean, it's like, I agree with all of you,
what you're saying, but supposing the tables were reversed.
Of course. And supposing, this is so smart. We have to.
And no, but supposing Trump is president.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even want to go to this.
No, don't.
So he's president, and he has the Justice Department.
Right.
And he really runs the Justice Department.
Yeah.
As he says he will. Mm-hmm. And he has prosecutions of all of these people.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe Biden and everybody else. You want them, Biden, if he's ever prosecuted, to really have the full benefit
of the
criminal justice system.
Of course.
So I think that that's what we have to, we who are all, who are progressives, who are liberals, Democrats, and are frustrated.
Rational?
And frustrated.
Right.
Need to just tell ourselves that.
One poll that I saw this week, too, is that 3 out of 5 Americans want a verdict before the election so they know what they're voting on. I mean, people are aware that there is an outstanding issue, and so that gave me some kind of solace.
Yes, they are aware, and you should have some solace.
Yeah.
Also, the two cases, the Georgia case and the current New York case, they cannot be affected by Trump's if he is elected and takes over the Justice Department, that Justice Department under Trump will not get rid of these cases. So these cases will move forward in New York and in Georgia.
Right. The one other thing on Trump, and then please let's move on, is how about, and you wrote about this in your Substack, when Big Oil came knocking at the door in Mar-a-Lago or just answered the call, and he said, listen, I mean, for $1 billion.
Do I have a deal for you?
Right.
Talk about the art
cool
of the
billion.
Deal.
This
is amazing. This is a Washington Post story this week. And it detailed a Mar-a-Lago dinner between Big Oil, the executives, and Donald Trump, in which they said, we're frustrated. We can't, we can't do the kind of digging and oil exploration we want to do. All these Biden regulations. And Trump said, if you give me $1 billion, I'll get rid of all of these. Now,
electric vehicles, done.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Anything that's ever been a problem for you.
But what interests, there are statutes, there are laws that are supposed to protect against outright bribery. This is outright bribery. Do you remember the Teapot Dome scandal?
Yes.
Well,
interesting.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Teapot Dome was Warren G. Harding.
Warren G.
Harding. Before Trump, Harding was always the worst president.
Yeah.
He was always at the bottom of the historians.
Yeah, exactly.
And from his grave, he must be saying, I'm so happy.
Look at me.
Thank you, Donald Trump. But the Teapot Dome scandal had a lot of the same elements. It was oil company executives paying off the administration.
Yeah.
And it was
quid pro quo. Stop it already.
A quid pro no.
Yeah.
And it was found to be illegal. There was a special prosecutor, and ultimately the president had to resign.
Yeah. Okay. So RFK Jr. apparently a decade ago had a brain worm. And he's fine from it, and he'd take more, and he's incredible. And have you been tracking this?
A brain worm.
A brain worm. Like
eating his brain.
Mm-hmm.
How much did they eat?
Well, I mean, we don't know exactly, and he doesn't know. But anyway, it was a problem when he was getting divorced. Now it's not a problem.
You mean he used the brain worm in his divorce? Oh, in terms of the alimony.
I think it was like,
so he's not very valuable. He's not valuable because he has a brain worm that ate some of his
I think it was that valuation. It was a brain worm valuation.
But he's still valuable enough to run for president.
Yeah. But a
brain worm. Do you remember the expression earworm? Like,
yeah, you have a song in your head.
A song. I have earworms all the time, every night.
Oh.
I have a song in my head. I can't.
I think is different. This is like my ex-stepmother had toxoplasmosis. Do you all know what this is? I'm sure some people.
I mean, toxoplasmosis
is when you get tiny little parasites. They can be all in your, you can get them from feces and water. You can get them from kitty litter boxes. So they say to pregnant
women.
We still don't know to this day, but she had them in her eyeballs and they were scared they would go to her brain. All to say this is a thing, but I don't know where he would have gotten them. Frankly, it's often associated with
developing countries. It seems to me is the most important part of the story.
He probably got it on eBay. I mean, he probably ordered it somewhere cheap. I mean, who knows? Okay, next we have to talk about get more serious. Let's talk about.
Well, it's serious. I don't want anybody to think this is a serious problem.
Yeah.
And my heart goes out to RFK Jr. Doesn't yours? My brain does.
My heartworm goes out to his brain worm.
Okay. Anyway.
So in terms of what's happening this week in terms of the Middle East, Gaza, and what Biden has now done, it's been very interesting and some progress, many would say.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest thing was Biden explicitly saying that American bombs, American munitions have killed innocent people in Gaza.
He said
For him to say that.
Right.
Really is important because that really is an admission of a violation of laws. I mean, there are laws on the books as recently as January that says that American weapons cannot be used in terms of the murder of innocent people. And the fact that he said that is significant. And he's pushing back finally, a little bit of pushback in terms of this pause. On Netanyahu.
Yeah. And you wrote a piece this week in Substack. You talked about anti-Semitism, how you've faced it as a Jew in America, how your parents faced it, and how what you see happening on campuses and how the media is framing it and the danger of conflating all protests with anti-Semitism writ large. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think there is a danger. I experienced anti-Semitism. My family experienced it, my father even more than I did. I know what it is. I know it's awful. And his generation had the first experience, direct experience with it in terms of the Holocaust. So this is not a laughing matter. This is not an unserious matter. But to assume that the protesters are anti-Semitic is a huge leap. Even to label them as all pro-Palestinian, I think is a huge leap. When I go around the country talking to students at Columbia, at Berkeley, elsewhere, what I find is that they are outraged, most of them, at the carnage in Gaza.
Right.
It's unfair. It feels unjust. It feels oppressive. The reason I am so personally concerned is that, as a Jew, not only do I feel complicit in whatever happens in that part of the world, but also I am involved in so many social justice issues, starting with the anti-Vietnam War movement, starting with the civil rights and equal rights movements, women's rights movements. Jews have been very involved in all of these movements. Why? Because of the history of oppression and injustice that so many Jews have experienced over the last 2,000 years. And to assume that a protest against what's happening in Gaza is anti-Semitic is just unfair. Many of the protesters are Jewish.
Right. Many are. And I think it's important to acknowledge that there have been, we've said this, anti-Semitic instances, the hostages being taken on October 7th and the deaths that happened are incredibly tragic, and this is not to say that's not the case, that those are tragic.
No, and also any protest movement, you're going to get some people, people of a variety of motives. You're going to get some people, you know, anarchists and extremists and wild. Yeah. But you want to look at the core. What is the actual core in terms of the motivation of that movement?
Right, and that's what you've been saying, and I do think that's important. In terms of, Joe Biden saying more than he has said before. Do you think that was influenced by the protests even a little bit?
I do. Without the protests, if there had been no student protests, I honestly doubt that Biden would have said to Netanyahu, as he did this week, no more bombs, or I'm putting a pause on the bombing. If you go into Rafah, I'm putting a pause. Now, it's very limited. We don't know how strong Biden is going to be in terms of keeping that pause going.
Yeah.
But it did send a very powerful signal.
Yeah. And he had said that Rafah was kind of a line in the sand, but I think you're right. It's got to be kind of an informal chain of events, right?
I think this is a big deal.
Yeah. In terms of one other thing that happened in D.C. this week, the MAGA ridiculousness continues in terms of Mike Johnson and Marjorie Taylor Greene leading the charge to get him out. And the Dems
came to his rescue. Hakeem Jeffries, the head of the Democrats in the House, really did something that they did not do before. They rescued Michael Johnson.
Yeah. Before meaning what? With McCarthy?
With McCarthy.
Yeah.
For the Democrats to come across the aisle and rescue a House Republican speaker is almost unheard of. I think that I commend both Johnson and Jeffries.
Yep.
They're partners.
Right.
I mean, this is extraordinary.
Right.
At a time of incredible anger and partisanship,
yep,
you have a House that is almost, you know, bipartisan.
It's pretty amazing. Though Mike Johnson is still not the most fabulous in terms of his policy and other records. I mean, he's out saying non-citizens are voting left and right. He's still problematic,
and he still tries to be right there close to Trump.
Yeah.
But he is getting work done. He's avoiding closures. He's avoiding any kind of stoppage of government. Granted, that's a low bar,
right?
But he also got money for Ukraine. He's getting things done, and he's staying in power to do them. And I think now that he is almost explicitly in league with the Democrats, this makes it easier for him to do the right thing.
Right.
I think there's a tendency for any of for all of us with regard to anybody who is the Republican speaker these days to assume the worst. And I'm not sure he is the worst, Heather. I think he's the best I've seen in many years.
Best of the worst?
The best, best of the
right.
worst.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Also, we have to, it's not just, it's compared to what? The variables that we are looking at in today's political.
Compared to Marjorie Taylor Greene, for example.
Right, I know.
But certainly compared to the extremists, the Freedom Caucus. He came out of that. I feared he was going to be another extremist. But he really is not. He's very pragmatic.
Well, he's more pragmatic than we thought. I would hedge a little bit more than
you. more than we thought.
But I hear what you're saying. Can we get to some economic news? Couple items on the list. So one, PepsiCo, the CEO of Pepsi, I mean, they have raised prices 7 times in the past decade. And now they are saying, you know, it seems like consumers are really suffering a little bit in terms of what they can afford. So this is might be problematic for us.
It's interesting. I mean, they have so much market power and control so many brands that when they raise prices, because they have so much power, they are able to raise prices, they undoubtedly affect a lot of people. So for him to say to Wall Street, consumers are holding back.
They're being stretched thin.
That was his phrasing. It's hard. And they're also, PepsiCo is unbelievably profitable.
Right.
Now, one thing that is behind him saying they're stretched thin is that the American consumer really is two groups. One group, hourly wage earners, maybe 60% of the population, they are under huge burden. They no longer have the savings from the pandemic. They're going deeper into debt. Credit card debt is going up. There are very, very high interest rates. So obviously they're holding back. But the rest of the consumers, the I would say probably the top 10%, are doing extraordinarily well. Their bank accounts are great. They're getting, you know, their savings are going up. The stock market is wonderful. They're in the stock market. They're into, you know, they own, the top 10% owns 90% of the stocks. And so they are spending. They're spending on vacations. They're spending on restaurants.
All of it, yeah.
They're spending on all of these.
Is there wealth inequality? Is there income inequality?
Gee, I wonder. More than ever before.
So bad.
And so that every time you see any report about consumers, watch your wallet, because there's not one consumer and there are two hugely different groups of consumers.
Right. And then let's talk about Apple. So Apple, the biggest stock buyback in history, over $1 billion.
And remember, those stock buybacks are designed to take profits and get them right as fast as possible to shareholders and to executives who are paid partly in stock options.
Bingo. Who are already doing just fine, by the way. But let's just enrich the system.
And that means you are not using that to pay your workers, your ordinary workers, and you are not using that money for research and development. And Apple, especially, has been using more money, more of its profits for stock buybacks than for research and development.
That's wild. $110 billion in stock buybacks. Okay, and then did you all see this ad? So the ad comes out where it's for the new iPad, and it's all very dramatic, and there's a song, and it's a giant crushing machine, like would crush a car.
This is the stupidest ad
I've ever seen. Yeah.
Apple is paying, can you imagine how much they're paying their ad agencies?
So it's who pianos in the world? Get crushed and busts of statues and
culture.
Culture is being crushed.
It's culture
being crushed. It's instruments, it's paint, it's metronomes.
You have this, it's almost a caricature of the way we think about big technology erasing or crushing, squeezing out culture, anything, creativity.
And then a tiny little piece of glass and metal exists at the end. If they had done it the other way around, where they put all this stuff in it, anything would have been better.
And
than
they
this.
Even have to apologize for this.
I know. It's not good.
I mean, they ought to, going to say they ought to fire their ad agency. I don't think anybody ought to be fired for anything. But it's amazing that they didn't see this.
I know. Okay, so in Alabama this coming week, there's going to be a vote at the Mercedes factory about unionization. This follows the Volkswagen one that happened a couple weeks ago, also in the South. This is a good thing, right? Yes,
the UAW is on fire, and it's just going from company to company to company. It's got the big three contract. Sean Fain, the new head of the UAW, is doing amazing work, amazing work. And in Chattanooga, Tennessee, a couple of weeks ago, nobody thought that that plant could be unionized. It had been tried to be unionized.
Yeah.
Six governors said, no, don't unionize. They threatened the workers. What did the workers do? After Sean Fain worked with the workers and the UAW worked with the workers, boom, they voted to unionize. And now Mercedes is the next up. The South, Heather, has been anti-union as long as I remember. The South is where you have the so-called right to work laws, which are actually right to work for less.
That's it.
Laws, but this is huge.
Yeah, this is very exciting. You know that I love a crossword. Do you all know I love a crossword?
I didn't know you loved it.
So I love a crossword.
Do you do crosswords?
I do the crossword, and I do the spelling bee, and I do Wordle, and I do
Why does this not surprise me?
All the New York Times. A lot of people do it. It's super fun.
I know, but you have the kind of brain for it. I don't.
Yes, you do.
No,
you
I couldn't have. I could not do crossword.
You could do it in your sleep.
I could never do a crossword puzzle.
Oh, of course. Well, one crossword puzzle you could have done was last Sunday in the New York Times, where number 28 down, are you ready?
28 down?
28 down was former Secretary of Labor Robert. Isn't that great? I got that one. I was like,
did you get that?
I mean, thank God I got it. Imagine if I was like, what is it? R starts with an R.
You know,
R. Roger?
I used to be I was a clue on Jeopardy twice in history over the last. And
when was it? In the 90s? Must have been.
It must have been. Must be either 90. It would, one was in the 90s. One was in the 10s. And nobody got it.
It just
either
the
time.
Sound went.
No contest.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Oh, and it was Robert Reich. Okay, next up. It was like that?
Yeah.
I love that. That's hilarious. Okay, happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day. You are the mother.
I'm the mother of all the two mothers. Of us. I don't know if I'm the mother of all mothers.
And you have and you also have a mother. And
I do have a mother.
I would like to take a moment to salute and congratulate all mothers, including Heather's mother.
True.
And you.
Thank you.
You're a great mother.
Thank you.
You're seriously a great mother.
Thank you. Do you know that?
I'm serious. I've seen you at your job mothering.
Okay.
And you take that unbelievably seriously, and you're doing a wonderful job.
Thank you.
That's true.
I'm going to cut this out and put it on my LinkedIn. My personal LinkedIn.
And if you ever want a recommendation
for being a mother, I don't, because I don't want to do it again.
Oh.
But thank you.
Anyway. Okay. Heather, thank you.
Thank you for saying that. Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day.
All who celebrate.
All of you. And we will see you next Saturday.